Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast After Dark, the after show for the Slash Filmcast. We talk about a variety of random topics. This week, what we're going to be talking about today, we're going to talk some shop about our top 10 episode. And then Jeff has a topic that he has not shared with me. And then we're going to be reviewing Soul, which let's just say we're going to be full spoilers for Soul. And you should watch the movie because it's a very good movie.
Very good.
But we'll be talking about Soul as though you've already seen it. So. All right. So that's what's in store for us today on the Slash Filmcast After Dark. If you want to support the Slash Filmcast After Dark, you can go to patreon.com/filmpodcast. Starting in 2021, that'll be the only way to get After Darks. We are going to do one more episode with After Darks that's going to be released for free to everyone. And then after that, it's going to be After Darks for patrons only. Although we might occasionally release one into the main feed, still working out the details of that. But patreon.com/filmpodcast and join the other 1,100 plus folks there who have decided to
the best
to make, make our dream a reality. Okay, so let's talk shop real quick, just for a couple minutes about the top 10 episode, guys.
Also, we have a guest here.
Yeah, right, no, that's right. Hi. Sorry, Huichen Bui is still here.
Hanging out, hoping you wouldn't notice.
Yeah, no,
she's still on the recording.
Dave with the warm welcome to the guest.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh yeah, she's still here.
Oh, she's still here.
I thought we scared her off with the Wonder Woman bashing.
Slash film writer and critic Huichen Bui is still here. Thanks for joining us, and we're
thanks
really
for
grateful
having
she
me again.
Decided to stick around for the Soul discussion. Okay, really quick, wanted to shop with you guys. The top 10 episode. It works best when we each pick 10 films and write a couple sentences at least about what we thought about each film, like write them out in advance. And then also there's other categories that I was thinking of releasing. Like I was thinking we should release them as the After Dark for next week to everyone, because the top 10 itself is going to take probably an hour and 45 minutes by itself. Right. So we can release the After Dark separately, but the other categories being, most like movie we didn't get, right? Yeah. Like most overrated film, movie they didn't get, most underrated film, biggest disappointment, and one of my favorite categories, favorite film of 2021, which is gonna be a lot harder to choose this year. But anyway, so those are kind of the categories. I'll send those to you guys.
For biggest disappointment, can I just put 2020?
Just all of it. And
yep, go ahead, Devendra.
No, sorry. For next year, I wonder if we should leave room for just like a bet on the industry. Like what is going to happen?
Yeah, where are we going to be?
Yeah,
where are we going to be?
How many movies will we have seen in theaters?
That's a great thing to kind of guess on. The other thing, by the way, that we just want to make sure we resolve on is, in the past we've experimented with different formats, where like. It was Jeff's idea that like, so HT,
that I proposed that idea and you still give me shit about it.
Yeah. Okay. So HT, have you been on like countdown episodes, right? Like, have you counted down top five or top tens of things with people on a podcast before?
Oh, like ranking episodes? Yeah.
We've
done that with Slash Film Daily, and they tend to descend into chaos and bloodshed.
Yeah.
So Jeff had a very reasonable idea a while ago, which is like, it's kind of a bummer when like my number five is your number three, right? And so like I choose number five, I talk about it, we talk about it, And then later on, you get to number three, and it's like, well, we already talked about it, you know. So it's like,
but that person ranked it higher, and they therefore theoretically love it even more. So it should sort of be their movie to talk about, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
do you guys share your rankings beforehand? Because maybe that would
Well, that was Jeff's idea. It was like, okay, so before we didn't share the rankings, right? And then so Jeff's like, let's share the rankings. That way, if someone has like their number five and it's someone else's number three, they'll just say, my number five is also Jeff's number three. We'll talk about it later. That was Jeff's idea, right?
By the way, I stole that from a board gaming podcast called The Dice Tower, where they do that every time. Yeah. And I think it works well when they do it.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad idea.
So we did it, and A, it was kind of awkward the year we did it, and B, people really were bummed because there was something about the frisson of us not knowing what each other's choices were. Like that was a critical component of the podcast.
I kind of agree here, by the way. Yeah. It is funny that Jeff, the proponent of the Unsullied Life, is just out here showing top 10 lists all over the place.
It was easily at least 4 years ago when we tried this experiment. And I don't know why you keep bringing it up, but
I was totally
happy with letting that idea go. It just seemed to work well in this other podcast that I listened to. I understand, like, the idea of what's your number one, and then, you know, it's shocking. That's fun. I also understand people were saying that, like, remembering what somebody else's five, it's just kind of hard.
It's like, my number five, my number three is Jeff's number five and Devinger's number nine. You know, it's just it was clunky. But so this year, I think we should continue with the we don't tell each other jack shit about our lists.
Yeah, I agree.
Before we do it. Okay, cool. All right. Well, that is decided.
I'm glad we have to litigate that idea every year again.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right. So, Jeff, you have an After Dark topic for us
today. Yeah, I know. I kind of miss our / film court where we adjudicate film related topics for the audience. And the reason we haven't done one in a long, long time is we don't go to movie theaters, and most of those had to do with going to movie theaters.
Right.
But I miss it. I loved that segment. I had fun doing the / film court. And so I have something that happened that feels like a / film court, even though it has nothing to do with movies, but I wanted to propose it to you because, there's this person I know. Let's just call him Bleff. Uh-huh. And
Sounds like an asshole, but yeah.
I mean, you can be the judge. You'll be the judge. But Bleff had himself a lovely Christmas morning where Bleff and Bleff's family, they unwrapped many packages and had many Amazon boxes that had to be broken down and delivered into the recycling bin. But the thing about the recycling bin is that, you know, because of holiday schedules, there was no pickup of the recycling bin. And so it was already full. And here we are on Christmas morning with, you know, bags of discarded wrapping paper and boxes and things that were clogging up the house. And it would be several days before the...
I really don't like where this is going, but okay.
Really?
Go ahead. Yeah, I think I know where this is going, but go ahead.
Okay,
yeah.
So Bleff, see, he lives on the street with other people, mm-hmm. and there are other recycling bins mm-hmm. that are not full, his neighbor's recycling bins. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so Bleff goes, no harm, no foul. These are already on the out for on the street. I'll just put our, these are not, it's not soiled food. It's not stinky diapers. It's just recycling wrapping paper mm-hmm.
So Bleff went and asked his neighbor for permission before using their property, right?
No. It's not their property. It's the city's property.
I have a question before this anecdote continues. Is Bleff the evil counterpart, or is he just another counterpart?
He's just this guy I know. Okay. Just a fella I know.
Yeah.
And what? So the thing about Bleff's wife is Bleff's wife had an issue with this. Bleff's wife said that you don't do that. And I will let you guys decide. But Bleff feels like this is a victimless crime, if it's a crime at all. Not even a crime to Bleff. The idea of you. The neighbor has put the recycling bin on the street, meaning they're done adding to the recycling bin. And their recycling bin is half empty. So Bleff's little bags of harmless wrapping paper can just easily go into the neighbor on the street. It's on the street. It's out on the curb on the street. So my question to you is, what do you think? Do you think Bleff is justified in this? Is this an okay thing to do?
How much did Bleff fill up?
I mean, the rest of the bin.
Just one bin or like multiple bins?
There's just one bin. Recycling bin.
You get one bin.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Hey, let's start with HT. HT, do you want to weigh in on Bleff's crimes or lack thereof?
Well, I think Bleff had the right idea in mind, but he should have gone through the proper channels.
Yeah. Really? You as a neighbor would want to get the knock on the door saying, "Hey, can I put some of my wrapping paper in your garden?" Like, that would make you feel good as a neighbor?
Sure. Yeah, as a neighbor.
What if I'm planning on using that space for something that you don't know about?
What if all of a sudden I have all these other boxes and I go out to my yard and I think, oh man, my recycling's half empty.
Have you ever gone to your trash can or recycling, opened it up, and seen someone else's shit in there? It feels like a violation.
You mean literal shit?
No,
that would be bad.
Like, yeah,
that
would certainly literal be bad. And figurative. It feels like a violation.
Why?
It
feels like a violation. Why would that feel like a violation?
So you're saying, I mean, if you annoying. Went out there to your, if you were like, oh, hey, oop, forgot one last thing, let me head out there. You go out there to drop something off and it's full of someone else's crap. You would not feel weird about that.
I'm really honestly trying to answer that. And I feel
we live
like
in a society, Jeff,
and, in a society.
I feel like if the trash can was like on their property, on their side yard or something, and I walked up onto their property and put it on, then I think that's a step too far. I think once it's on the street, it's now it is a public trash can. For use,
it's
by
not
anyone.
A public trash can because they have to take care of it. They have to bring it in. They gotta replace it if something goes wrong. So,
and I agree. Public. I would never throw my kids' dirty diapers in it. I'd never throw food waste in it. Anything that could potentially
but
soil
it's
or
a slippery slope.
Yeah, it's a slippery
for
slope.
Bleff.
Slippery slope.
Bleff,
yeah.
It's maybe at one point just wrapping paper and boxes, but what's the next step?
Yeah,
it's a gateway.
Like you're saying Bleff gets addicted to using other people's trash cans?
You start by like planting evidence at the scene of the crime. Next thing you know, you're pulling an Armenian money train heist.
Yeah. Just think of Lem. That's all. You have to think of Lem.
All right, so I know people will disagree. I think a lot of people feel the way Bleff does,
no,
aka
this is,
have a
by
complete
the way,
disregard for the rule of law.
Yeah, but this is something I'm dealing with myself right now, actually, because this is what you're talking about right now is suburbia law, Bleff. Like that's really what's happening here. Is like how do you maintain peace with the neighbors next to you? First of all, I have my neighbors' phone numbers. I can text them if anything's up. Like, it's pretty easy. Like that's a useful thing to have, but my neighbors are just getting some work done in their house and they got this big old, those big, like, remodeling trash bins, you know, those giant dumpsters on their, on their driveway. And they're like, hey, if you want to dump anything, feel free, just throw it in. And we're like, okay. And, that was super helpful because they gave us permission to do that. And we were able to clear out a lot of stuff from our backyard or from our garage, from the move and everything. What I've learned is that a lot of suburban life is just living with trash, right? It's just stuff that cannot fit in. You can't fit into your one allocated little recycling bin. You must protect it and you got to fill it up as much as you can because otherwise that trash has to live over, you know, overflow till next week's recycling bin. And then you always have too much. There's always too much. So this
I think what
Devin
was trying to say is you ruined this person's Christmas.
You ruined it.
So
absolutely.
And by you, I mean Bleff, of course.
I don't want to beat Bleff. A dead horse here, but I do think that the idea of like knocking on the door and then opening it and being like, hey, do you mind if I put this bag of wrapping paper in your trash can? Them going, sure, is one thing. But if they go, no, you can't do that. Then what's that
you
situation?
Then you
like,
maybe
do
you're a considerate human being and accede
like,
to their wishes.
Yeah. Now I hate them. Like, what, what possible reason would you have to deny me?
Hey, maybe Bleff, I was planning on using that. Maybe you have no idea what my inner life is, Bleff.
I'm planning.
You have no idea
what my garbage space.
You have no idea what I want to do with my life.
You put it on the curb. Putting it on the curb means I am done with that. I have put it out on the curb. It is out of my...
Oh, no. I sometimes add I put things on the curb
preemptively, Bluff.
Yes. You know? Yes.
I put things on the curb and I'm like, hey, I intend to put something later there, okay? Mm-hmm. Anyway, speaking of things going into vessels they don't belong, let's talk about Pixar Soul.
That is a good transition. Nice. Wow, nice. Good segue.
All right, so we're gonna spoil Soul, but I want to hear from HT, who's been such a good sport throughout this whole episode.
She did not expect this, not
yeah,
at all.
So I can't say HT,
quite relate to Suburban Troubles that much, but I empathize.
What did you think of Soul?
Oh, Soul is great. It's definitely the most ambitious, most interesting, most exciting movie that Pixar has released. But it's also the latest one of Pixar's releases that I was like, huh, it feels like the people at Pixar are going through something right now.
Yeah.
They're always going through something. Always.
Yeah, there's so much dealing with the existential in this movie. And Pete Docter revisits some of those ideas that he explored, for example, in Inside Out with Soul, but in a way that still feels fresh and interesting. My only complaint is that like there's so many ideas in this movie. It's like bursting to the seams with the ideas. So it feels like, so in that way, very unpredictable and exciting to watch. But at some point, I was wondering what its central sort of question was, what its central idea was. And I did get, I was really moved by like what it explored about the idea of everyone having a spark, something that inspires them to live, and that inspiration for life coming from some new soul was really exciting. But there are so many twists and turns in how it explores that, because it is like four movies in one. There's the afterlife movie that feels very reminiscent of Coco. There's the beginning of the film that is so musical and lyrical that feels very much like a riff on Fantasia, especially the rhythm and blues one segment from Fantasia 2000. And then like there's the body swap film that is the majority of the movie that becomes really intense and high stakes in a way that made me very anxious.
Literally life or
uncut
death.
Gems,
yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, suddenly Pixar has become, it's a movie that transitioned to so many things, which I liked, but at the same time was just like so taken aback by. And I have to say, I do not love body swap movies. And I especially want to point to the fact that this is a film that kind of plays into the practice of putting people of color, like minority characters, in these body swap roles. And it's something that has been done so many times that it's become almost a tired trope. Yeah. And it's been criticized for taking these minority characters who already have very little screen time as it is, and sort of putting them on the back burner for some fun animal hijinks. I do think that Soul manages to not fall into some of the traps that trope has been known for, but I just have a personal dislike for those. So that part I didn't quite enjoy, but I really liked the ideas that it was playing with and the really abstract parts that it plays with as well in such a fun and weird way. So I really like Soul. It was such an I can't say unexpected, because Pixar always delivers, but it's one that goes beyond just the easy emotional hit points that Pixar can do in their sleep.
Yeah,
emotional hit points. Love it. Love it. Devendra Hardwar, did this movie hit your emotional hit points?
It certainly did. Critical hit, I'd say. I don't know. It's
death blow. Fatality.
Death blow. Yeah.
KO.
This movie hit me certainly in a lot of ways, and I love it when Pixar goes deep, and it's something they've always been known for, but Pete Docter especially, right? He will find some way to just break your heart, and in Up, he did it in the first, 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Like, he just did it immediately. Inside Out kind of felt like that, too, as an exploration of, like, anxiety and depression. This movie, like, basically, this is him saying, this is my life philosophy, right? It's like, I figured out the meaning of life, And I have created a movie to kind of represent it. And it is something that I fully kind of gel with. This movie kind of has a lot to say about the value of your life and how you value yourself and what you do. And maybe you shouldn't be defined by the achievements you're aiming for, or your hobbies, or your job. Like, there's a lot more to define you, and this movie kind of goes deep on that. So I love all that about it. It certainly hit me at the end. Like, this is a movie I'll be thinking about for a while. And when we say, like, Pixar movies come from them just going through things, like, yeah, as I'm approaching, you know, older age too, like, it is a thing I'm thinking about, like, the value of my life. Am I where I wanted to be at this point? There's a lot of things to think about there. To what you were saying, HT, I think this movie is also at the same time, this is Pixar's Get Out, you know? This movie traps a black character in a cat and has Tina Fey, of all people.
That was the real slap in the face.
Yeah, yeah. Because
if it was Tina Fey,
but yeah. We've talked about this before. I've always been iffy with the way Tina Fey deals with race. I had to stop watching Kimmy Schmidt.
Unbreakable
Kimmy. I had to stop watching that show because there was a point in that show where they just like had Titus, I think, dress up in geisha costuming and just say to the audience, I can take whatever I want and do appropriate whatever I want. It is insane to me that kind of she ends up in this place where she is get outing Jamie Foxx's character, and also kind of doing the Dances with Wolves thing where she's living his life better than he can.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. That kind of got to me.
Is that appropriation?
Yeah, it's a lot of things. It's also at the same time kind of a
you could almost say
magical...
it's Avatar-esque.
Yeah,
way, you know,
it's very Avatar-esque. It's funny because a lot of these problems just wouldn't exist if it wasn't Tina Fey, if it wasn't a white person in the role.
It is one of the most baffling decisions.
Cast somebody else. Sorry, Devendra.
I'm just agreeing with you so hard.
It is astounding. Yeah,
but all that said, when I was watching this movie, my law professor in college used to have a phrase he would say like, are you getting a blank tingle? Like which is like, does this remind you of this thing? And there is a scene in this movie where they arrive at the place of lost, the zone, as it were. It's like, you can see everyone who's in the zone here, but if they're in the zone too much, they become lost souls. And at that moment, I got a Jeff tingle. I don't know why. Got a Jeff Cannata tingle. And I texted Jeff separately. I was just like, Jeff, I really feel like this is going to resonate with you. Mm-hmm. So my question, Jeff, is did Soul resonate with you, especially in what it had to say about following your passions and perhaps following them too much?
It's an interesting thing how many people texted me about this
Jeff
movie.
Jeff, are you okay?
It's a little, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it's a movie about a 40-something failure who did never achieved his dreams,
or is he? Because, you know, Jeff, to get real, which we sometimes do on the After Dark, right? Like, you have described yourself at various points as a failure, right? Like, you have used that term, I think, publicly. So I hope I'm not blowing you up here.
I don't think publicly, but fine.
Okay, sorry.
No, it's fine. It's true. It's demonstrably true. I don't know if you remember, but many years ago, you and I talked about doing a film project together, and you asked me about ideas about what kind of movie I would want to make. And I said, I want to make a movie about failure. You know, like, that's fascinating to me. And I think this movie is about it in a lot of ways. And I think, yes, it has a, I think, hopeful and rosy place that it lands, but I kind of like that the fact that the movie, like, it doesn't actually show him making a decision, right? It doesn't actually show Joe coming to this place of deciding what his life is about. It just shows him
it's a realization.
Yeah, it's a realization, but he doesn't actually, we don't get the typical Disney Pixar ending. You know, there are more questions in this movie than you usually get with these films. And I like that. I really like this movie. I think it's kind of the spiritual successor to Inside Out in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as good. I do think I agree with HT that it is, it's kind of weighed down by so many interesting ideas. I love the sci-fi angle of it, but honestly, I kind of wish it just been a movie about Joe. Yeah. You know, like that first section, it's only, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes long.
It's 10 minutes that we get of Jamie Foxx actually being in Joe's body.
It's the best part of the movie. Like, I just want to be in that vividly realized Pixar version of New York City.
Run down New York City school. Like, it is, a lot of that feels very real.
And it's so beautifully animated, too. Like, wow.
So beautifully animated. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I had forgotten. I mean, I think I knew that there was like that sort of soul animated, you know, stylized character. I think I'd seen that in an image somewhere. But like when he falls through the thing and ends up dead, it was genuinely shocking to me. I like forgotten that, and I was sad. Like I don't, sad because the character died, but like I wanted to spend more time in that world. Like the you know, Pixar famously is all keyframe animation, right? It is actual animators animating. It's not mo-capped. And I don't know specifically that this movie wasn't, but I suspect that's still the case, right? They don't mo-cap. They animate in a very traditional Disney style. And the way all of the music in this movie, when we are with the real human characters, is animated, the fingers on the piano, the fingers on a saxophone, the hands on sticks on drums, it is incredible to watch. It is so evocative and so powerful, and it really celebrates that music in a way that like La La Land wanted to, you know, like it really achieves that love of jazz. It permeates the first 10-15 minutes of this movie, and I felt like, yes, there's a lot of great ideas. Yes, I'm a sucker for sci-fi and fantasy ideas and the expression of them, and this movie does them really well and fun and clever, but I kind of wish it had just been a much more traditional movie about Joe and his dream of becoming a jazz musician, because I just had so much fun in that element and like seeing that style of animation and that vivid expression of this populated world of real human beings. And you know, when we get to hang out with him and go to the barbershop and go to his mom's place, like all of those sequences in the real world are so much more fun to me and more interesting than any of the, you know, before life or afterlife stuff, which was still cool. It just felt like not the movie I really was excited about at a certain point, which is really strange to me because usually that's the kind of stuff that I'm much more interested in. But the music and the kids and the, like his life, all that grounded reality stuff just felt so well done. And I connected to it. And of course, you know, it is about a guy who is in this place in his life that you don't really see movies made about. You know, this kind of guy is a little older than most movie heroes or central characters, protagonists. And he is at this crossroads. And I did connect to it. I did relate to it, of course.
Yeah, you get he's to a point a little in your punchy. Life. He's no Steve Trevor, right?
He's no Steve Trevor. No.
I want to add to that, Jeff, because I really agree with you. I think that this movie is not unfocused, but this focus on so many things. And I think it would be even stronger if it honed in on the stuff about Joe and his story, because it is threaded throughout the film. And I do like that he gains a better appreciation for his life now is by having that new soul inhabit his body and having that whole escapade. But I think that it really misses the mark by, I don't want to say misses the mark, it kind of misses the mark by having the climax of the film, the big emotional, big action climax, not be about Joe, but be about number 22. Number 22, becoming a lost soul. And I feel like that was played more for like that big dramatic climax, less so than it was about what the film was trying to tackle, like the themes it was trying to tackle.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Pixar felt this. I mean, obviously I'm imposing my outside view, but it feels a bit like they felt constrained a bit by being a animation studio for kids, right? Like, let this be a movie for adults. I think it would have been really cool to not worry about wacky characters on a ship and, you know, goofball
Jamie Foxx
antics.
Is a cat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that, all that stuff. And I say that, and I think it all works in the movie. Like it's not bad. It's just, I feel like there's another movie sort of covered up by that stuff. That is this much more adult, interesting take on midlife crisis and, art and what it means to be an artist and the love of music and all of that stuff that could have been a really mature film, even in the Pixar animation style, and would have worked really well. I think it would have been beautiful, but I kind of feel like it feels the need to have big action moments and these wacky characters and all these great ideas, which are all good. It just, it makes me a little sad for the movie that it could have been.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I think as a counterpoint, I feel like this movie still feels kind of tight, though. It's like, it's an hour and 40 minutes. It's not super long. I like the visualization of the, you know, the pre, I don't know what they're calling it, the afterlife or the pre-life stuff, but the stairway into the beyond and just like infinite blackness around them is a really gorgeous rendering of what, like, you know, what the great
I
beyond
found that to be terrifying,
be.
By the way.
It is terrifying.
It is. When they get to the light, they just like blink out of existence.
Yeah. You know, just like it is like it's the opposite of a black hole, right? And you are just walking up to it, and the way it looked on my TV too, by the way, like great if you have a good TV and something that shows off HDR really well, like the contrast of that is just so bright. And I kind of like, even outside of that too, like the pre-soul area, the sort of like abstract art they go for some of those characters, especially all the different counselors who are a lot of fun. I found that fun.
That
like, we don't
was,
spend
that
a lot
stuff
of time
was awesome. Like it was it kind of this good. Combination of 3D and 2D. Abstract. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was delightful.
It was very Picasso like. I loved it. Mm-hmm.
But so Jeff, it sounds like I guess the movie didn't resonate with you in the way that maybe me and many of your friends thought it might.
No, it did. I mean, it did. It did. I just. I mean, it wasn't as, certainly I think Inside Out is a much more powerful movie to me, on that level. And I also feel like, I don't even want to say this, but it's a bit pat at the end, you know, like, yes, it's about all those moments. Yes. That's what life is about. But also he did achieve his dreams. Right. He did do the thing he'd always wanted.
Sure.
And I kind of don't buy the fact that he would walk out of that thing and say, OK, what's next? And she says, we do it all again tomorrow. And he goes, oh, I honestly feel like that's the best thing that you could say to that guy is we get to do it all again tomorrow.
Sure. But that's I think that's the crux of it. Right. Is that instance where he is like, I think normally, in any normal. Any normal movie, anybody would be like, yeah, I'm game. Let's do this forever and ever. This is what I've always wanted. And I've had this happen to me where I get something that I've always really wanted, either professionally or otherwise. And you get it and you're like, oh, well, that's nice, I guess. It feels nice.
Yeah.
It feels nice to actually have achieved this. But that sense of like unfulfilled fulfillment is a very peculiar thing. And I think this movie captures that. I think that is a real thing. It's just hard to convey. Yeah.
I had an acting teacher who used to call it divine dissatisfaction.
Yes.
And oh, I love that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it is something that I think about a lot. I mean, it that is the drive that keeps us going, right? Is that, yes, I have this, but I want more. I mean, I'm talking about Wonder Woman 1984 a bit now. but I don't think the I want more is always bad, right? I don't know. I think that there's a different thing between realizing that life is special and the moments between the big touchdown dances are special and never having the touchdown dance, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a different thing in a movie to like say the character gets the touchdown. They scored. They did the thing they've always wanted to do. And they also realize that the world is special in other ways, or they never achieve the thing they wanted to do. Right. It's that to me is, I think, a bolder narrative. And
Yeah. If he didn't actually get to play at the end, I think that probably would have been a stronger movie too, where he just had to deal with the fact that, okay, maybe I'll never achieve this thing, but that's okay because right. I am contributing to the world in other ways. Sure.
Right.
It's interesting. Okay. So the thing that I was reminded of when I watched this movie was this interview that Raphael Bob Wachsberg gave to mm-hmm. The Verge in 2015. Raphael Bob Wachsberg is the creator
of BoJack
Horseman.
Before times, in so many ways, yeah.
The question was asked of Raphael Bob Wachsberg. He's the creator of BoJack Horseman, and he said mm-hmm. The question is asked to him, ultimately, it seems like the overall message of this season of the show is life is about hard work. There are no lessons, no happy endings to be had necessarily. To which Raphael Bob Wachsberg responds, I don't believe in endings. I think you can fall in love and get married and you can have a wonderful wedding, but then you still have to wake up the next morning and you're still you. Like, you can have the worst day of your life, but then the next day won't be the worst day of your life. And I think it works in a positive and a negative that all these things that happen are moments in time. And that because of the narrative we've experienced, we've kind of internalized this idea that we're working towards some great ending. Mm-hmm. And that if we put all our ducks in a row, we'll be rewarded and everything will finally make sense. But the answer is that everything doesn't make sense, at least as far as I found, end quote. And
it's beautiful.
I like that. The idea that, like, basically you can achieve the greatest thing you've ever wanted to achieve and you're still the same person after that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I thought the movie brought out really well. To me, there's some interesting decisions the movie makes. One of them is that it depicts like this idea of the zone, and it's just like, we've all been in the zone, you know, like, and it's so amazing that the movie kind of grapples with that idea. Like, when you're doing something that you love, time doesn't seem to be passing as normally. You're just really just like creating in a way that just is extremely fulfilling and exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie says, like, hey, like, if you do that too much, you actually become this monster, you know, and I think that's like an interesting message for the movie to have. It's not like, yeah, get in the zone. Like, that's what you want to do with your life. Follow your passions. You know, the movie's not saying that. It's saying, hey, if you follow your passions too much, you'll become this horrifying creature that is almost impossible to rescue.
You'll become, you know, like, a Reddit troll. Oh,
right,
God.
Right. And I really like that it's advocating for this idea of balance and to the point about the ending, and like whether or not he should have gotten what he wanted. I don't know. I disagree with you guys. I think that the idea that he got what he wanted and it wasn't what he thought it would be, it honestly reminded me of Leonard Shelby in Memento. You know, he's like, but the time that I actually kill my wife's killer, it's going to feel different. And like, that's almost literally a line he says. And then he discovers, spoilers for Memento, it doesn't. And this is kind of a realization that many people need to make, like the things that they've been working towards their whole life, when they achieve them, it leaves you as the same person you were before. Mm-hmm. And that's like a bold, somewhat depressing message to have for a film like this.
For sure.
But it's one that I think is very valuable. And it's one that I think that like goes along with the whole, you know, enjoy the moments between the moments.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about like finding balance in your life. Go ahead, Jeff.
I agree with all that. I don't disagree with all that, any of that. But I do think that in the terms that this movie is establishing, his life, because of that moment, is indisputably improved, right? If we are to believe that he is not happy as a teacher, and his mother does not approve of his artistic life because she doesn't see value in it, we see that she goes and appreciates him finally. She sees his talent. She sees him making money doing it. And theoretically, he would now not have to be a school teacher because he has a consistent, well-paying gig doing the thing he actually loves instead of the compromise. Now, I understand the movie is saying, well, he also got things out of his interactions as a school teacher, and there was value there, and these are the things you see, and I'm not disputing that. But I do think that the movie is trying to have its cake and eat it too. And to me, well, I feel like it...
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you can. Yeah. You go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the thing I was going to say that the movie doesn't come down on is like, I don't think you know at the end whether he takes
it
or not.
You purposefully don't. Yeah,
and I like that. I said that at the beginning. Yeah, I like that. But I feel like the movie gives him, like, literally lets all of his problems be solved. And I just don't.
It's an existential crisis.
I would say it replaces his previous problems with new ones, right?
Yeah,
like
that, and
his
that's
previous
life.
Problem. Yeah, his previous problem was I'm not making any money. My family doesn't recognize me. Blah blah blah. Yeah. Like, yes, all those problems are solved, but the new problem is, oh, this is what I'm signing up for? Oh, like this, which like in many ways is like less fulfilling than my teaching job, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, this thing that demands the most of me every night and like after years of doing this will likely feel the same and become boring, you know? Like possibly, like it replaces the old problems with new problems.
Yes,
I agree.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I just didn't, in that moment, didn't buy that he would see it that way.
Yeah.
But I think it's fair.
He's come to like a new understanding in some way of what his purpose is, because when he's speaking to the people running the right before, and he's asking about that idea of behind the spark, and he conflates spark with purpose, and they say a spark doesn't equal purpose in life. There's not like people aren't. It basically comes to the conclusion that people aren't born into this world to do one thing, and that's something that he has to contend with now that he has been chasing almost like a false goal, a false dream, not a false one, but one that he thought was his own entire reason for being. And now there's so much more to it than that.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really interesting thing to grapple with. I don't know if it comes to a conclusion about it, which is interesting. I think it has a great like start of like a idea for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like I loved the quote about the ocean and the water. I thought that was gorgeous and beautifully executed in the movie, too.
Yeah, this movie isn't very explicit about a lot of things, and I appreciate that because especially even in Pixar movies, I think sometimes they can hammer those themes home. You don't really get that here. It's a lot of things that the big emotional scene, you know, where he's replaying what 22 did in his body and those realizations of seeing a family, you know, across the street, catching the leaf falling, like that's all, it's just all visual, right? It's not telling you anything. While we're talking about this, by the way, can I just say like the whole, like the people, the counselor setting up all the baby souls, how messed up that whole situation is, because they're just sending psychopaths to Earth. And they're like, maybe we shouldn't do that.
I was expecting a patented Dave Chen analysis of the ramifications of this fictional premise.
It's kind of messed up. They definitely produce Hitler up there, right?
Yeah, I mean, and they're like, whatever, that's Earth's problem, you know?
Somebody produced Stalin up there.
Yeah, it's literally a line of the movie, that's Earth's problem.
That's Earth's problem, exactly.
Yeah, they're very amoral up there.
Speaking of interesting implications, I wanted to touch on the idea of the zone being the same place where people can become lost souls. And it made me think of some of the people who were already lost souls there, or maybe like began not completely as monsters, but maybe people who entered that realm through depression or anxiety, and that being equivocated with being in the zone and being in that high, and that high being the same as that low. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that?
Well, what did you? It sounds like you're saying that is a damaging equivalence, right? Like the way you're describing it.
I don't want to make that like that assumption immediately, like that connection, but it feels like it's like making sort of some not dangerous, but like some crossover in terms of that in terms of comparing those two states of minds.
Right. Mm-hmm. I guess I would say that my interpretation was not like this is where like lost souls are not necessarily all depressed people. Yes, it is like a subset of depressed people, right? Or it is a subset of people who are not mentally well adjusted, where like they became too obsessed with their true love in life. And so how do you feel about that, HT? How does that sit with you?
I think that's fine, but I feel like I wish that there had been more of a addressing of that. When I heard of that realm, I was like, oh, that feels like a place where people enter when they are depressed or dealing with those kind of dark thoughts. And seeing it sort of be crossing over with being in the zone felt a little bit odd to me. I don't know. Maybe I wish that there was more address to it, but it just kind of became like this wild territory. So that was just my sort of my thoughts as it was unfolding.
That's only one way you can become a lost soul, though, right? Yeah. My understanding was that there's multiple ways. So I think it's a bit tempered by the fact that's merely one cause for ending up in that place as a lost soul.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'll just say that, I really love this movie. I cried during it a couple times, like not in the places I thought I would, you know, like there's no like, first 5 minutes of Up in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that's like, that was clearly meant to be a gut punch. We should, by the way, call out that I think the music is done by Trent Reznor.
Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
Along with
the jazz
of John Baptiste, I think is.
Yeah, I don't think think Trent Reznor did any of the jazz.
Reznor and Atticus Ross like worked specifically on the music of the before and after, like that abstract area, which felt a little bit more synthetic and experimental, which feels more like along their lines.
Yeah, yeah, no, but the blending of all of it is very beautiful in my opinion.
Yeah, the jazz, the way the jazz is expressed in this movie, I just fell in love with that part of it.
It's beautiful.
So yeah, I wanted to call it. I had this moment while watching Coco, right, where you see the guy, kid playing the guitar doing the fingerings, and I'm like, I've played guitar before. I'm like, those fingerings are correct. Mm-hmm. Pixar does more to make sure their characters are accurate than like many films do with live action people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it's incredible.
It's really impressive. So I'm just like, when I'm watching people play instruments, I'm like, I have full confidence that what they're doing is musically accurate. Yep. But
there's that shot when he first walks in and sees, what's her name? The
Dorothea?
Amazing. Yeah. And it like she's lit in this incredibly evocative way where you kind of see her silhouette or not silhouette, but like profile. And then the camera sort of pans down the length of the saxophone as she's playing it. And like all the movements of the valves in each section of the saxophone are authentic and where her finger, it's just like, so it's like music is sex, you know, it's beautiful. It's amazing. It's so
definitely
good.
It's the most sensual that Pixar has ever been.
Yeah. 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 So, this movie really resonated with me because it's about a guy who dies or thinks he's going to die before he achieves what his life's dream is. And as somebody who had a potentially life-threatening incident last week, it really and who, you know, is into some of the creative arts, it really resonated with me and reminded me that there are things more important than your dreams. You know, that's really what I took away from it is like there are things more important than your dreams. And like even if you achieve your dreams, like there's still things that are more important than them, you know. So
it felt like a weird 1-2 punch with Wonder Woman 84, because in both movies, it's a sort of about like relinquishing your dreams, you know, and giving up this desire to have something. But they handle it in such different ways, you know. But it was a strange back-to-back viewing experience for me because both of them are kind of the anti-movie, right? Movies are all about, you know, La La Land is all about like, but then you get everything you've ever dreamed. You know, it's like Willy Wonka ending. What happens then? Well, then you live happily ever after, you know, Charlie. And then that's kind of what Hollywood movies are. And then here are these two movies back-to-back where it's like, no, it's about understanding that what you want is a fool's errand, you know. It's like
I will say, by the way, that is sort of the ending of La La Land, but La La Land is not entirely happy ending. But we keep talking about that movie.
You know, Jeff, you're also reminding me that this weekend I watched a two-hander starring Jamie Foxx and a white actor set in an urban environment that featured in-depth discussions of jazz music, a deceptive visit across town to Jamie Foxx's character's mother, and a couple pivotal scenes set in a nightclub.
Love it.
But enough about Michael Mann's Collateral. Let's wrap up our review.
Let's wrap
that
it up.
That comes in, by the way, from who is that coming from? At Joaquin Quinoa on Twitter, who sent me that.
Great handle.
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah.
Can I mention one thing? Just one more thing.
Close this out. This is the last sentence because we're keeping HT way too late right now.
I just want to say, like, just pointing out once again that this is Pixar's Get Out. There's a point in this movie where one of the counselors kills a random black man, just kills him. The wrong guy. The guy dies. He is aware of this. He comes back to life. The counselor chides him for his bad food taste, like just really judges what he's eating and lets him go to let that guy just live his life, having experienced death. Like, it is.
And the movie is very clear that he is scarred by this.
He's scarred for life.
There's a whole Pixar movie about this guy's existential crisis.
This is literally everything wrong happening right now in this country. But okay, hilarious.
Such a good point. Such a great call. Look,
That scene also literally looks like The Sunken Place as well.
It does.
Yeah. It does.
Anyway, all right. Well, on that bright note, Soul, it's great. Check it out. And also, thanks HT for sticking around. I know this went a little bit longer than we said it would. That sometimes happens. But check out HT's podcast, Trekking Through Time and Space. Find it wherever podcasts can be downloaded. We'll link to it in the show notes as well. HT, thanks for joining us for the After Dark.
Thanks so much for having me again. And this was a lot of fun, even if it was a little past my bedtime.
Thank you.
Appreciate you staying up.
No All right. Problem.
And thanks, everyone out there. We'll
thank
see
you, patrons.
Later. Yeah, thanks to patrons. Patreon.com/filmpodcast. We'll see you next week.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, Baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.